We had an incident at a local high school right nearby, Catholic Memorial High School, right in West Roxbury on Baker Street, playing one of the Newton teams, I think Newton North, in basketball as one of the playoffs. And kids at basketball games often get into this making fun of the other team and kind of provoking them, and the purpose is to rattle some of the players, you know. And so the Newton kids were saying, where are all your girls? And kind of, you know, put down in a subtle way, you know, where are your girls, you know. And but then in the course of the back and forth, the kids from Catholic Memorial, some of them started saying Christ killers, calling because the Newton School has a large Jewish community. And of course, it's been a scandal. It's been in the papers. Have you noticed it? Over the past week, it's been even on NPR. This is a very serious thing. And where do kids get this? Well, they hear this at home, but it's part of a cultural backdrop that's really rooted in a misunderstanding of the scripture. And I just want to encourage you, come to the class on the Gospel of John after services today, because some of this idea of the Jews responsible for the death of Yeshua come from weird understanding, misreading of the text, but nonetheless, it's something that we need to consider. Very, very sad thing. We're talking about today about Vayikra, the parsha that we're reading, and almost an introduction to the whole book, which is all about sacrifices. We're going to talk about that, but I want to point out one other thing about the conditions that we live in. We have this incident, this terrible incident in a suburban high school. I mean, we're talking, you know, we're not talking about people who are backward. We're talking about a suburban Boston high school. And then when we think of other things that are occurring, we think of the political climate that we're living in now, and all I can say is Vesmer, you know. It's unbelievable. I don't want to talk about it in specific terms. You know what I'm talking about. But we really are at a nadir, a low point of political discourse in this country. It's interesting that a New York Times correspondent who I enjoy, quoted Psalm 73 in this connection, and I'm going to read this to you. Therefore, pride is their necklace. They clothe themselves with violence. They scoff and speak with malice. With arrogance, they threaten oppression. Their mouths lay claim to heaven, and their tongues take possession of the earth. Therefore, their people turn to them and drink up waters in abundance. And yet, their success, as we understand, really is quite fragile, these people. The psalm continues, surely you place them on slippery ground. You cast them down to ruin. How suddenly they are destroyed. Again, I mention it because we are living in a very tough period, unprecedented during my lifetime, of a level of the decline of political discourse that we just simply have not seen. And then again, this incident of Catholic Memorial reminds us of something that a famous writer once wrote. He said that civilization is just a thin veneer, meaning that if you push the wrong buttons, it's amazing how quickly a society can degenerate into violence and evil. You see? Now, all of this is meaningful in light of our parsha and in light of the book of Leviticus. The problem with Leviticus is it's all about things that we have a lot of trouble relating to. Sacrifices, animals being walked up onto a raised area and sacrificed by a professional class of priests. And it's something that is so utterly far removed from our lives that it's easy to say, well, that is so to be relegated to an ancient past that it really has nothing to say to us whatsoever. However, I think it does have something to say to us, and that's what I want to touch on very, very briefly now. First of all, we have to understand something about religion in the ancient world. And as John Levinson, one of the top scholars of Tanakh at Harvard University, said in a class that I was with him, we were studying the Akedah, and he said, in the ancient world, religion was sacrifice. That's what it was. I mean, it wasn't just a part. It wasn't just part of the aesthetic or part of the sacred drama. That was it. Because people back in those days had something that I think we've lost, and they had a sense that somehow there is a God who you want to make things right with, because your future, your life is dependent on him. This is something that we have lost. So, what can we learn specifically from the book of Leviticus, and as we go through these different parshas, so that we don't succumb to the temptation to tune out and say, look, that was then, this is now, and that has nothing to do with me. We're an enlightened modern society, and we don't need all that stuff. What can we learn? Well, first of all, God is upset because we flaunt his ways. We see this most clearly on Yom Kippur, but I think it's an important thing to keep in mind. God is not just a cosmic pussycat or someone who just wants to restore us to emotional equilibrium as we travel through life. Now, he is loving, and he is kind, and he's terrific, but you don't want to mess with him, because he is not just your nice grandpa sitting on a rocking chair just wishing things could be different. No, there is a toughness to him, and that leads us inevitably to the concept of teshuvah, that making things right with people and with him is important. It's not something that's just casual, and that is a critically important thing. Those animals were killed because it shows something about God, that he expects, in a sense, there to be some kind of, I'll use the word retribution, but I think there's always a remedial kind of element to it. I don't think it's just that he's mean and wants a zap. I think he's trying to teach the people something, and he does it in an agrarian society through animals, and that was the way it was. But it's, even though we don't have animal sacrifices, and nor do I think we should, at the same time, let's keep in mind the big lesson. God is upset because we flaunt his ways. Now, number two, human sin makes life a mess, just like the floor of the altar in the temple. Now, this is the picture. We tend to have a very sanitized view of these things, but animal after animal is slaughtered, there's blood, there's entrails, and there's a huge mess. And I think the metacommunication, if we have the eyes to see it, is that human sin, our own and those of others, takes this beautiful world and fouls it up. And our sin and selfishness messes things up in the sphere of which we have power to operate. And it's a big deal. And we hear about it all the time, and we are all subject to it to some extent, either at the receiving end or to some extent at the giving end. And God says, listen, it's a mess because you're making it a mess. But there is a positive side to the messiness that I want to point out. And that is that the fact that God invites us with our mess into his presence shows us that he has a big enough heart to accommodate us in our messiness. In other words, before coming to him, you don't have to take a bath and get clean before coming to him. We come to him in our mess, and we lay it before him and say, God, it's a mess. It's a real mess. But I'm asking you to help unmake the mess. And it's very important, because a lot of us are fearful to come to him, except in very platitudinous, kind of distant kind of terms, where we even hide behind the words that we say, but we never get real with him. But God is saying, listen, if you want to learn something from the sacrificial system, from what occurred in the temple, it was a mess, and I was there. I was there. The people were there. You were there. It's a mess. But order and goodness comes out of the mess. You get what I'm saying about that? It's a really very important point that we don't talk about enough. And then, of course, forgiveness is possible, but it costs something. And so the animals gave their lives for the people. There's always forgiveness. There's always coming back. There's always making things right again. So these are the things that we learned. Okay. We read about it. I'll just read you a quick passage from the Parsha so you'll get the idea. If any member of the community sins unintentionally and does what is forbidden for any of the Lord's commands, When they realize their guilt and their sin they have committed becomes known, they must bring as their offering for their sin they committed a female goat without defect. They are to lay their hand on the head of the sin offering and slaughter it in the place of the burnt offering. So it's a catalog of different kinds of offerings. But notice again in the sacred drama, the transaction of forgiveness, we put our hand on the neck of the animal before it's killed. In other words, it's a kind of transfer of guilt, if you will, to the animal. Now, Yeshua steps into all of this. We do not have sacrifices now. There is speculation that there will be a third temple built and there will be sacrifices again. And if that happens, the MJRC, Rabbi Nathan, myself, Rabbi Ben, and all the other rabbis are going to have to get together and ask some very penetrating questions. Do we participate? And if we do, how? Don't ask me the answer. I don't know. We'll figure it out then, okay? And we'll let you know what we think is right. I will say in a preliminary way, certainly with the coming of Messiah, the status of the sacrifices would have a very different meaning. They are not expiatory. They do not have the efficacy that they might have had at a time before he shows up. But he is the quintessential sacrifice to which all of those look, and therefore there would be a change in the status of those things, even if we Messianic Jews were to participate in some kind of memorial sense. That's all I can say about that right now. We'll have to see. But when we get together on Saturday morning, we have the quote prayer, where we enter into that portion of the service which traditionally has all these lessons and all these passages about the sacrifices of Leviticus, and we offer our worship as our offering in the name of the Holy One, the one to whom all of those sacrifices look. Okay, so there may be a temple. Who knows? We will see. Sometimes the most important ideas show up in very odd places and very old places. We're modern people, and the idea of animal sacrifice is utterly foreign to our experience or even our moral sensibilities. Why do you want to punish a goat? You know, these things are contrary to our moral sensibilities. But before we relegate the concept to the dusty place in a museum basement, let's remember that there are central truths hidden in the ancient bloody sacrificial drama detailed in Vayikra, that God welcomes us to come to him even in the messiness of our lives, that someone had to take the hit for us so that we could become normal again. And that's Yeshua. And that someone is the greater Isaac, if you will, the one who had the authority to lay down his life and to take it up again. It's Yeshua, our wonderful Messiah, who is the ultimate expression of all that Vayikra teaches. May we rejoice in him, and may we learn lessons as the weeks progress as we study this book. Shabbat Shalom, everyone.